You know, whoever's listening, if you're feeling like, I really don't want to, then I think it is completely valid to take a step back. Mm. A lot of times that's a good flag, a good warning sign. I'm getting burned out and I need to take a step back.
Hi everyone, my name is Paola and this is the Days Before You podcast. Today we're talking about a topic that I think needs to be addressed more. What it is like to be closely connected to someone in church leadership and how that affects your own faith. By now you've probably realized that I'm not your usual host. There is a reason for that. I am a pastor's kid. My family has always been deeply involved in the church. My parents have served as missionaries in Guatemala, Argentina, Chile, the Philippines, and now Mexico. Thankfully, I've had a positive experience growing up in the church. However, there came a point where I had to make this faith my own, to move beyond simply following what I was raised with and truly decide what I believe for myself. For a lot of people in my position, whether you're a pastor's kid or spouse, part of a family deeply involved in the church, or just someone who's always been surrounded by faith, there's a real struggle between expectation and personal conviction. It can feel like there's a pressure to serve, to live, or to live up to a certain image. And while being involved in church can be a beautiful thing, it can come from a place of desire and not just duty. That's why I have invited here with me Chelsea Sutherland. Chelsea is a nurse and a pastor's wife. In fact, right now her husband serves as the Kentucky Tennessee Conference Ministerial Director, a role that we sometimes jokingly refer to as the pastor's pastors. So, Chelsea knows firsthand what it's like being involved with someone in church leadership, and she understands the unique struggles that come with it. Chelsea, thank you for being willing to join us today and talk about this important topic.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now, to start, this is kind of going to lead to our first question. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, I feel like sometimes when you're involved with someone in the church leadership, that kind of becomes your identity of like, that's the pastor's wife, that's the pastor's kid, that's the elder's daughter, you know?
Yes.
So just tell us about you.
Well, thanks. So I am the youngest of three. Mm-hmm. I have an older brother and sister. I grew up in California, and my family was pretty heavily involved in church growing up. We did a lot of volunteering with church events, especially like kids events, VBS, things like that. And I went to nursing school out in California and realized that that was a special part of ministry that I could be involved in my career. And then ended up moving out here to Tennessee when Joel and I got married. And Joel's my husband. And have been working as a nurse since being out here in Tennessee. And then finding my different roles in ministry, which I guess is something that we're going to dive into. It's been an adventure for sure to have been relocated and transplanted, as people have told me, from California to Tennessee. And that involves like socially and then in the church in that aspect. But things that make me, I guess, I am really family oriented in that my family is super important to me. I grew up in a bicultural home. So my dad is Mexican. My mom, she's from Florida. And so I have the Caucasian mixed with a Mexican culture growing up in my home. And so that's been, it's been really, I think, I guess like enriching in my life to have both of those things. And that has transcended into ministry and into how you view serving in the church. Really enjoy, I love my family, love spending time with them. And that includes my inherited family. So Joel's side of the family, he comes from a big family. And so there's lots of siblings. And so our family gatherings are like 15 plus people. But I enjoy reading. I enjoy crafting at home. more lately, I enjoy sleeping. In my adult life, it's like people ask, like, what's your hobby? Sleeping.
I think that comes naturally as a nurse.
Right.
Those long shifts will, like, drive me crazy.
And yeah, I enjoy looking for the adventure in each day, doing something new. I'm spontaneous, so I enjoy going on unplanned adventures.
And before I go to the question, I just love how you describe, like, your... No, that is from Mexico, and then your mom is from Florida. Like,
I know, it's a little country. I know, right? Exactly. It's like I could say,
but it makes sense. Right? Like, it's its own little place.
Yes.
So tell us, you know, for those who might not be familiar, you know, I think, and I've said this before, I don't know if I could marry a pastor.
Mm.
I think that there is a lot of expectations that come with it, and a lot of almost like a job in its own, you know, being a pastor's wife. And I'm sure you're the one who sets your boundaries, and there's a lot to navigate with all that. But I do think you have to, in a sense, also have that calling if you decide to marry somebody in that field. Mm-hmm. So what is some of the things that you've experienced that people expect from you just because you're married to the pastor?
Oh, that's a good question. It's a heavy question, and definitely one that I hadn't thought of much before meeting Joel. I grew up heavily involved in church. So I saw the dynamics of a pastoral family and a pastoral couple, whether good or bad. And I never really thought of it as being like my reality someday. So I didn't put a whole lot of thought into it. But when I met Joel, and he obviously found out that he was going through the theology program at Southern, and he and I had a really good conversation almost right from the start. Mm-hmm. And the conversation revolved around, for me, what was your priority as the pastor? Is the church going to be your priority, or is family going to be your priority? Mm-hmm. That's a heavy question. Mm-hmm. But the truth that I think is that the family is priority for a pastor. That's that nuclear ministry that he or she should have. And then by putting that effort, that time, it overflows into a healthy ministry in the church. And thankfully, Joel and I both have that perspective. So becoming a pastor's wife, I will say it's humbling and terrifying. Humbling because all of a sudden you have this position where people are coming to you with their problems. They're coming to you with with sensitive issues, with family problems, with concerns for their children, with concerns for their faith. And the only reason, well, maybe not the only reason, but I guess the starting reason that they're coming to you is because you hold that position. Not necessarily because I showed any reason for people to trust me with that information, but because I simply had that position of pastor's wife, that automatically made me a point person to come to. And so that was really humbling for me because I thought, wow, like, there are so many other people who are more wise and more experienced. That's amazing that you feel like you can come to me. But then on the flip side was like, oh my gosh, you're coming to me. So now I have to tell you something that I'm hoping is going to be life-changing to help you through this really dark time or difficult time or happy time. And that does put a sense of pressure. And because for me at least, and I'm hoping somebody listening or watching can identify with this, depending on who you're talking to, there's this pressure, not necessarily for you to have all the answers, but to make sure that your theological preferences are lining up with who you're talking to, so you don't compromise the person you are representing. Mm. Your husband, your father, whoever significant person you're connected to in ministry, you have this thought, if I say the wrong thing, will it get them in trouble? And that is a lot of pressure because you may be thinking something, you may be working through something yourself. You may be trying to decide, what do I actually think about this principle or this preference or this truth or this thought? And there is this, I guess, block where you think, but I can't really be honest about it, because then will it get my husband in trouble? Will it get my wife in trouble? Will it get my dad in trouble? And that's been something that I've had to work through, because I think morally, we don't want to lie. We don't want to, or even if it's not just like, maybe we're not outright lying, but we're giving the wrong impression, like we want to be careful with that. But trying to be authentic, trying to be transparent, trying to be honest while still walking this line of, let me meet this person where they're at while still representing myself and my family well. And that's a lot of pressure. And it can be difficult.
Yeah, it makes me think especially of like pastor's kids. Mm-hmm. You know, think of a celebrity who, say, you know, they grew up in the cameras, in the spotlight. And, you know, when they mess up, you know, usually they go like a crazy route. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously everyone's talking about it, right? Mm-hmm. And you always hear like the Disney stars that go crazy. And, you know, and it's hard because you're a child and you're growing in the spotlight and all your mistakes are made public. Now, obviously, this is in a much smaller scale, much more... super, you know, just small.
Yeah, but still,
like, you're a pastor's kid. You're, all the church members are watching you.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
the church elders are comparing you to all the other kids. And, of course, that's a big pressure. And, you know, and obviously you've kind of seen that also as well as a pastor's wife. How would you say this can impact, or in your own experience, how has it impacted your own personal faith journey?
It has been a double-edged sword because there is this sense of accountability. I guess for me personally, it's not necessarily been accountability to act my best, which I know I've heard from many a PK that's been like, that was kind of like the cliche, like be on your best behavior. You know, we're going to church or we're going to go to so-and-so's house. So make sure that you're your best behavior. And while I didn't experience that necessarily as a child, in my adult life, the accountability has been to study and to pray and to try to understand so that I know what I believe, so that I don't walk in this gray area where I just kind of go with the tide, but to try to be solid in what I believe. And that accountability, I think, has been good for me because I have experienced so many different perspectives, especially when we were pastoring in a district. Each church has its own DNA. It has its own culture. And so understanding what I believe was important because then I could be consistent in wherever we were. But the flip side of the coin or the other edge of the sword is it can make, at least for me, it made me feel discouraged because it felt so complicated. And there was this point, I remember this was actually when Joel and I were still engaged and we hadn't quite gotten married. And Joel was doing, I believe it was a evangelistic series. And there was just so many things that were coming up, not about Jesus at all. It was just like these issues coming up about things that I'm like, why does this even matter? This is not exactly what happened, but just as an example, like the color of the carpet. You know, like, why are we fighting about that? And I remember, because it was multiple things happening in that particular circumstance, the pressures coming on, I just cried because I thought, this is like so complicated. This is beyond just Jesus. This is beyond grace. This is beyond, we're going to go to heaven soon one day, rejoice. And this is so, we're so bogged down in all these tiny details. And I probably cried for like a week straight. One, because I was discouraged. Two, I was like, this is going to be my life. So I think for me, it can be discouraging. It can very easily become just burdensome. And that's when I really felt like that personal time of prayer and of just being with God, being with Jesus, spending that time in honestly, it for me, it was a combination of things. It wasn't just reading. It wasn't just prayer. Listening to music, listening to podcasts, talking to people I trusted, mm-hmm. just kind of like bathing myself in an environment of Christ and his character helped to root me back down. But it wasn't like it was a one-time thing. Like mm-hmm. it is ongoing to, for me, to keep my faith alive. Because again, it can become so discouraging that it just kind of like sizzles
down. I get the idea of making it your own versus I'm just here because of my husband or because of my dad or because of, you know, whatever, my mother, you know. So making that faith personal. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of goes, because when you have made that faith personal, then even with all the challenges, and it doesn't mean that you're going to breeze through it without any issues or without any problems or tears, you know. But even when you go through those challenges, you're like, I have God with me to guide me through it. Mm-hmm. If you were to say, you know, I feel like when you're in these roles, you know, especially your role, but when you're with someone, again, that's heavily involved in the church and you have the relationship, there's like this expectation to serve. Mm-hmm. Expectation that, oh, you're going to do the children's story. You're going to sing, lead the song service. Mm-hmm. You're going to lead VBS. You're going to, you know, whatever else there needs to be done, we have these people around, you know, to help out because, you know, they're part of that family. How can you transition from doing it because of a duty that you feel like you have to and it's the expectation versus doing it because you want to and it's coming from your heart?
So for me, it was being honest with myself of truly what I felt was my gift. And, you know, whoever's listening, if you're feeling like I really don't want to, then I think it is completely valid to take a step back. A lot of times that's a good flag, a good warning sign. I'm getting burned out and I need to take a step back. And I'm thankful that I think it's being talked about more in our time about that, about taking some space if you need to kind of reboot yourself.
Setting up boundaries.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I think that's important. And especially when it comes to ministry, because ministry is so, it uses every part of you. It uses your emotional side. It uses your intellectual side. It uses your physical side. I mean, if you've ever set up for any kind of church event, you are putting tables up, you're putting chairs up, you are staying up late, getting ready. I mean, it is a physical task too. So I think that if you're feeling that part of burnout, take a step back. The other thing that I think is important is taking the time to understand what is your gift. Because especially if you know, we've grown up in the church doing things and there is that expectation, or in this case for me as a pastor's wife, the typical cliche is you play piano and you can sing and also teach a cooking class that is vegan. And full disclosure, I did not play piano. I can sing if somebody is leading, and I can cook vegan. I just am not like amazing at it. Yeah. So all of those things, I mean, that's like, you know, wow, you don't fit that description at all as pastor's wife. And when Joel and I got married, I'm thankful that I had come to that conclusion already, that was not going to be the role that I was going to be stepping into. And if there was a need for that, then like the Lord will provide, but it's not going to be from me. But it did take some time to figure out what is it that I am gifted at? What is it that I feel like God is calling me to do in this space? Mm-hmm. And what I believe is truth is that everybody does have a gift. Everybody does have a place that they can really express themselves in that. So I think my advice would be take the time to find out what that is. Mm-hmm. Do a little bit of some, I don't know, finding like new outlets or trying new things that relate or not relate, but manifest rather what you like to do. So like for me, I enjoy decorating and that transcends into a lot of like social events that I've done. I would say take the time to do that. The other thing is that resentment, it builds up so fast and we don't even realize that it's building up. And when we start to have even just those physical reactions to, like, somebody's asking me something, mm-hmm. you get tight, you get stiff, maybe you get a little nauseous. Like, your body is reacting to this stress that you're automatically feeling. And I think it takes some time to come down off of that, to allow yourself to get over that automatic stress response so that you can honestly say, no, that's, I'm not going to do that. But I can tell you what I do enjoy doing, and that's the I guess the third tactic that I used when people would ask me to do things that I knew I wasn't comfortable with doing or that I wasn't going to, like it wasn't going to go well. I would offer like, no, I can't do that, but I can do this if you need this, and oftentimes that helped to like guide the expectations from the person talking to me, especially if it was like an elder or deacon or deaconess or somebody like that, who you would see regularly or do see regularly in church or in leadership, then they know like, yeah, this is the okay things that you're willing to do. These are the not okay things you're willing to do. So when you set up that consistency and that those boundaries, then some people, sometimes they have a hard time with it, but my experience at least has been people have eventually come to the point they can respect that.
Yeah, I know. And I like a lot how you said about finding your own talents that, because like an example, me, like you said, I can sing. Like you don't want me singing up front.
Right,
you could
exactly.
ask me, but you probably would regret that decision after I went up front and started singing. And I don't like preaching. I don't like public speaking. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I had a positive experience growing up in the church and with my parents, even in the leadership roles they sometimes were in. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, like, growing up, I want to be a missionary, you know, like, so, you know, I had that influence kind of shape what, you know, I wanted to work with the church, but I knew I don't want to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. I knew like another common missionary thing was being a nurse. I don't want to be a nurse. Like, I can't deal with blood. And that's when the first time I found out was I started helping a Sabbath school, a children's Sabbath school, and I loved that. Mm-hmm. It did make me realize I didn't want to be a teacher, but I love helping at Sabbath school for, you know, a weekend versus like every day of the week. But yeah, and eventually I found my calling with writing and communications, and I'm very happy that now I get to do the talents that God gave me for the church without having to feel everyone else, other maybe expectations. Mm-hmm. But how would you say, you know, how could you make sure you're using these talents to help your spiritual growth versus just hinder it? Because again, when you burn out or when you have so many things going on, how can you just, I guess, continue drawing that boundary even when you're doing something you love?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be easy to get to the point that you realize, oh no, I'm in trouble. And that has happened to me a couple times. Pretty simple for me to keep saying yes to things that were being asked of me and things that I wanted to do and that I felt like I was going to be good at. But it was eventually came to, I cannot keep up with this. I actually am exhausted. And this is now become a task. This is a toil. This is no longer refreshing. This is not filling me up. It's hard to know when to stop saying yes until you've said it too much, really. Like, because you keep thinking, I can do it, until you get to the point that you realize, I can't do this. Yeah. And I would say that when you come to the point that your schedule is busy with maybe three or four commitments during the week that in some way or another, either like one time I was making the bulletin for a church that we were pastoring. And so that was one deadline I had to keep up with that week. I was also teaching Sabbath school. So that was another deadline I had to keep up with. I was also involved with women's ministries. So that was another deadline I had to keep up with. And when you get to like the 3 or 4 mark, that's a lot, especially if you have your family at home, children, you know, that is a lot to keep up with.
And your day job.
And the day job. Yeah, exactly. If you're working. Yeah, exactly. And at the time I was working night shift. And so trying to balance how to do all of that. So there were times that I would come home from, I'd work Friday night, come home Sabbath morning, prepare the Sabbath school lesson really quick, maybe make something for potluck, although that didn't happen very often. And then trying to gather all these things, and then I would stay awake the whole day. Mm-hmm. And while, again, all of those things that I was doing were wonderful and they were things that I genuinely enjoyed, it became too much. And so, like, my advice is that when you say yes to two or three things, you're comfortable with how your week is going, you're comfortable with your schedule, like, stay there. Yeah. Stay there, because you're going to have to give up something else if you're going to add something to the plate. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me has been one of the keys to keep my service at a balance between still like self-filling and faith enhancing, mm-hmm. versus complete burnout. Mm-hmm. And then that does affect your perspective of the church, of people, of God. When you are feeling like you are completely depleted, that's a really good time for the devil to come in and start to whisper some things, give impressions of some things that are, you know, can lead you down some dark paths.
Yeah. I guess it's being like self-aware of what you can take, being strong enough to set those boundaries. Because I'm sure it's a lot easier said than done to be like, no, and actually when you're in the moment. And again, with all the expectations. Now, I don't think this should all fall on the individual to be the one setting boundaries, to be the one saying no, knowing their, you know, their limits. How can a church create those, I guess, or more of a welcoming environment, more of a, I don't know if that's the word, I think more of a healthy environment for those people who, you know, to be like, okay, let's give them some space. Let's respect their free time. I don't know, whatever it might be that they might need help. How can a church be more conscious in that way?
That's a good question. I'm glad you brought it up. I was actually just thinking about that too, like preparing for this time together. Excuse me. So I think that culture of boundaries, of respecting boundaries, honestly starts with the pastor. And I'll use that as the example. I know that you brought up earlier, you know, if maybe an elder or somebody else who's heavily involved. I'll use the pastor as the example. It is, I think, very important that whoever the pastor is to you, in this case, for me, it's my husband, that he was on the same page that I was with what I could do. Because if the church is seeing that the pastor is communicating clearly and consistently, my wife will not be playing the piano for church service. My wife will not be leading out the song service every Sabbath. That shows that united front, so that there is understanding from the church, this is where that line is. And so I think that conversation should happen first between you and that significant other person in your life, to say, this is what I'm comfortable with, or this is where I'm at emotionally or spiritually, where I feel like, yes, I can serve, or I feel like I need to take a step back. And that way, that communication is clear between you, your dad, your mom, your husband, your wife, so that when somebody from the church asks either one of you, the answer is the same. And I think that there are some churches who have kind of grasped that spirit and culture of boundaries already. There are some who haven't. But when at least they see that consistency from both sides, I think it will often, at least I've seen it become part of the DNA of the congregation.
Yeah, the culture of the church. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like, and this is even going back to the very first question when you answer that, the pastor or the elder or you know, whoever's involved, the first thing that they're worried about is their family and the people, you know, those close members that they care about, whether it's your husband, your wife, your son, daughter. It makes me think, I've heard this analogy a few times of Noah and how, you know, you would think Noah was a failure because he couldn't get anyone to get in his ark, right? But he got his entire family to be there. And I think that, that's, you know, so that true. Counts for a lot. You know, yes. So I like the idea. Now, how would you say, because I I feel like another extreme could be like, I'm just going to say, like, this is my husband's job. You know, I'm not going to do anything. Don't ask me anything. I don't want to be involved anyway. You know, I guess, you know, what would you say to, in a sense, you know, drawing the balance, also being like, what, you know, what joy comes from serving? Like, is there something that you can gain personally from that? And I, no, it's not, we don't do it because of ourselves, but, you know, what's your experience being with serving in that sense?
Yeah. And that's often actually discussed among pastors' wives because there is that calling that you had mentioned earlier. Yeah. I believe that there is a calling and it comes at different times. I didn't feel a calling until I said yes to Joel asking me to marry him. Before that, I had no impression. But I know for some, for some pastoral spouses, that they do feel the, I guess, that desire to not necessarily be involved. And that's valid. That's where that person is at, and that is absolutely valid. In my personal experience, I have found it to be extremely fulfilling to be part of my husband's ministry. The reason is because that is the major part of his life, that all of his stresses, most of the, or I'll say that most of his stresses probably are coming from the ministry. Most of his joys and his victories are probably coming from the ministry. Where he's spending the most time of, like, the most of his time is something to do with the church or ministry. And if I had removed myself from that, I would be missing out on most of him. And I have had, I praise God that we have had a very wonderful and fulfilling marriage because we have made it a joint effort. And so the things that he's experiencing, I can share in. I understand because I know the dynamics of that church, or I know how that person maybe can be, or, you know, whatever the reason is because I've been a part of it. And the second thing for me has been a growth in my faith to be part of ministry, because it honestly has helped me see the great controversy in a huge and practical way. I mean, it's happening in front of me. This fight between good and evil, the fight for people, for to communicate to them how much God truly loves them, and then all these other influences trying to tell them otherwise, you're seeing it happen in front of you, and you're also seeing how God is winning. You're seeing how God is present and is there. And if I had removed myself completely from a lot of, from church, from ministry, from being involved, I honestly wouldn't have seen that as much, I don't think. And so being, it has been personally for me able to grow and strengthen my faith. But again, it's, I think more than anything, it's built my marriage to be stronger because I've been involved.
We've touched just a little bit, but just kind of ending on how eventually, like, do you make this your own faith, like your own choice? What would you say is, I guess, you know, and again, we've talked about this, but what would you say is the best way to continue embracing this every day, continue choosing this, and continue, you know, whether it's your spouse or with someone else, making it a joint effort, because I think it's good that you're supporting each other. What is the best way to continue doing that? Not just today, not just tomorrow, but like every day, in a healthy way.
Right. Yeah. I think the way you worded it almost kind of even answered it, that it is a daily thing, that it's something, a decision that you're making every single day, that you are going to give that time to be used by God in your sphere, in your home, in your church, in your places of influence. And it becomes really easy to come to just be a little bit like apathetic about it, like especially if it's just the daily grind and you're just kind of going through the motions, and it can really feel that way. And so being intentional is exactly what that is, being intentional to give that time to think about what you're doing, to think about what you want to do as well. And that's another thing that has helped me, setting goals having dreams is so important because it moves you beyond what may feel like unnecessary things. When you have a goal in mind and when you're moving towards something, that is motivating for me at least. And so, who knows what the Lord will lead us to do, but Joel and I will often talk about areas where we could have ministry. And Joel is a pilot. He enjoys aviation. And so we've thought, oh, you could be a missionary pilot and then I could be the nurse. And then we can have this whole ministry setup going on. And again, who knows what the Lord is going to lead us to do, but having dreams keeps you, I think, united, and it keeps you motivated to reach to keep moving forward. And most importantly, and above all, staying in connection with Jesus through some kind of study, some kind of worship, meditation. I do not read my Bible every day. because life gets crazy. But what I do try to do is listen to music. That is a huge source of meditation and connection for me. So when I'm in the car and I'm driving to wherever, being able to listen to music or listening to podcasts or stories or sermons even. I mean, just something that helps to keep you kind of just reground you into Jesus, because it's true. I mean, he is our lifeline. He is going to be the only thing to keep you going, I think, and I believe, when really there's nothing else. He's what's going to keep you going. And so keep connection with your spouse or with, whoever you're living with in the home at the time that you're doing ministry with, and stay connected to Jesus.
I think it's important to remember, especially thinking of pastor's kids who decide maybe not to follow that route of, being a pastor or necessarily, marrying a pastor or, necessarily go straight directly to ministry. I think it's important to remember that you can, God calls you to different things, different professions, different, and there's still many ways to serve.
Yes, yes.
And I think what you mentioned, keeping that daily relationship with God, making it personal, drawing your boundaries, but finding that joy in serving through that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else, Chelsea, that you think would be great insight for someone going through something like this?
I think if you're feeling that burnout, if you're feeling that... if you're feeling the pressure to do something in your church, to serve or to lead, one of the biggest things that have helped me is just to be honest with myself. Be honest with yourself about where you're at. Find somebody you trust. Talk to them about it. And be willing to take that time to refuel yourself. And then search for that place where you feel like you can be your best and use your gifts the best.